The Supreme Personality of Godhead is so merciful that He left Bhagavad Gita for us to read. And through the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, we are able to read and understand, sit together today in this really dense and unsuitable age of Kali Yuga, wherein people are just doing their own thing with no factual basis or factual realization of God. It's a greatly fortunate thing. So today will be, as I mentioned earlier, the last class of the second semester. We can have some sort of revision sessions, but we can decide on the format, the content, and the process for that a little later, towards the end. In the last class, we had discussed the first half of Bhagavad Gita, wherein Krishna gave the modes of material nature, and he said the different knowledge in the mode of material nature, different happiness in the modes of material nature, different karta or the doer in the modes of material nature, and different karma in the modes of material nature. He also gave the results. Now, in the next part of the 18th chapter, we shall discuss further Krishna's topics. In this, if we can kindly have a little bit of train of thought, it will show how Krishna will give confidential information or confidential instructions, more confidential instructions, and the most confidential instructions. And that will also be corresponding to certain realizations which we'll try to draw through these instructions of Gita. So we start with verse number 40 on page 728. This is 18th chapter, verse 40 on page 728 of Bhagavad Gita. So the Lord has briefly described about the different happiness which one gets, and then He finally concludes the modes of material nature by saying the following words: Natad asti prithivyam va divideveshu va punaha sattva prakriti jayarmuktam yad ebhi syat tribir gunai. There is no being existing either here or among the demigods in the higher planetary systems which is freed from these three modes of material nature. So the Lord concludes the modes of material nature by this final instruction, saying that there is no one either on this world or on the planetary systems which are subjected to the three modes. And even the demigods are also subjected to the three modes. Then next few verses, the Lord dwells upon the Varna and Ashram system, and we'll go deeper into that. Text 41. Brahmana kshatriya visham shudranam chaparantapa karmani pravibhaktani swabhava prabhavair gunai. Brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaishyas and shudras are distinguished by the qualities born of their own natures in accordance with the material modes, O chastiser of enemy. Text 42. Shamo damas tapah saucham shantirarjavam evacha jnanam vijnana astikyam brahma karma svabhavacham. Peacefulness, self-control, austerity, purity, tolerance, honesty, knowledge, wisdom and religiousness, these are the natural qualities by which the brahmanas work. Text 43. Shauryam tejo dhritir dhyaksham yuddhe chapi apalayanam danam ishvara bhavascha kshatram karma svabhavacham. Heroism, power, determination, resourcefulness, courage in battle, generosity and leadership are the natural qualities of work for kshatriyas. Text 44. Krishi goraksha vanijyam vaishya karma svabhavacham paricharyatmakam karma shudrasyapi svabhavajam. Farming, cow protection and business are the natural work for vaishyas, And for the Shudras, there are labor and service to others. Text 45. Sve sve karmani abhirataha sam siddhim labate naraha sva karma nirataha siddhim yata vindanti tachrunu. Now, by following his qualities of work, every man can become perfect. Now please hear from me how this can be done. So Krishna, in these particular verses, he gives the different qualities which are found in Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas and Shudras. But before giving these verses, the Lord says that a man does work according to his own nature, or he is born of certain nature, and it naturally comes to him that he likes to do certain things in certain way. And the Lord says, that's all right. It's not a fault that you are doing these kind of things which naturally come. Because the question will arise, now I am still under the modes of material nature and I am doing the things I like to do according to my nature. So the Lord says, even if you are in that situation, you can still achieve perfection by just doing your own work. And the Lord explains in the next few verses on how actually one achieves perfection by performing his own work. Text 46 on page, I beg your pardon. Any questions before we go ahead, or should we? The one point I wanted to make before we go ahead is that in text 43, Kshatriyas are, one of the qualities of Kshatriyas are Ishwara Bhava, means that they feel they are the lords. And being a lord is one of the natural characteristics of a Kshatriya, because the Kshatriya is meant to give protection to others. But it never is the case that because I have Ishwara Bhava means I exploit others. Because in the modern context, in politics, people who have power or who have this feeling of lordship, they think that it's their birthright to exploit others for their own selfish benefits. But Krishna says that is just for the purpose of protecting rather than exploiting. Text 46 on page 731. Yataha pravrittir bhutanam yena sarvam idam tatam svakarmanatam abhyarcha siddhim vindanti manava. By worship of the Lord, who is the source of all beings and who is all-pervading, a man can attain perfection through performance of his duties. Here, this is a very beautiful purport because it's very much applicable to the modern context, at least in Silicon Valley. If we read the purport and if we turn to page 732, and the first line on page 732 in this purport, Srila Prabhupada writes, everyone should think that he is engaged in a particular type of occupation by Hrishikesh, the master of senses. And by the result of the work in which one is engaged, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, should be worshipped. If one thinks always in this way, in full Krishna consciousness, then by the grace of Lord, he becomes fully aware of everything. That is the perfection of life. The Lord says in the Bhagavad Gita 12:7, Tesham Aham Samudharta. The Supreme Lord takes charge of delivering such a devotee. That is the highest perfection of life. In whatever occupation one may be engaged, if he serves the Supreme Lord, he will achieve the highest perfection. One of the common modern problems the people in general have, or the devotees also who are working have, man, what sort of work am I engaged in? Maybe I should change my line of work. Maybe, you know, this work is boring. Maybe, you know, there are some issues with this work. Probably if I take up to some other work, I'll feel better. Maybe not even the work. Maybe I should even change the career. Maybe I should make a drastic changes to my life. Srila Prabhupada writes that everybody is engaged in certain type of work by the grace of the Lord, and that should be the first criteria. Now, that doesn't mean that whatever work comes, you do it and with no consideration or any repercussions. For example, if your work involves extensively something which is against the spiritual life. For example, if one is engaged in an occupation similar to a butcher, or some other activities which are like grossly against the scriptural injunctions, then by taking permission from your authorities, you can give up that and take up to a particular better quality of work for spiritual development. But one cannot whimsically say that I am engaged in this work, I don't like the work, I'll give it up. That whimsical sort of thing Krishna says is that it's you are not going to achieve perfection, because it's by your nature you are engaged in that type of work. Somehow or other everything has come together and then you are situated where you are today. So use that work as a platform to serve God instead of blindly or whimsically groaning and moaning and kind of saying that this is not the work I want, I could be doing better or something like that. So if at all one needs to change work, then one's consideration is spiritual life. If it helps improve spiritual life, then do it by all means. For example, if one has to travel extensively as part of one's work, with no time for sadhana, with no time for eating properly, with no regulated prasadam, with no regulated association of devotees, you have to travel long hours, then probably it's the right step to kind of be situated in a job which is more stable, or it's centered around devotees. But I have seen many people, there are at least reverses at work, or the boss is not good, or they are not getting raises or promotions, then that becomes a criteria of complaining against this job, which Krishna says is not true, because you are engaged by mercy of the Lord in particular type of work you are engaged today. At least I read this purport and I was very satisfied that yes, even if I have complaints against my work, it is given to me by Lord, I'll do my best, we'll see whatever happens. As long as it's not affecting my sadhana, why should I complain? Or the other case can be that you have an extreme natural tendency to do certain type of work, and you are like so interested and so absorbed in it that that's your natural work. And maybe again, by the recommendation of your counselors or senior authorities at temple, you can change it. Because that also Krishna touches later. We'll come to that later. Questions? Comments? Yes, go ahead.
I was going to say this was a very valid point that you brought up, because most of us in the Silicon Valley are always complaining, actually.
Right. I'm no exception. But text 47. Shreyan swadharmo vigunaha paradharmat swa anutishtitat swabhava niyatam karma kurvan napnoti kilbisham. It is better to engage in one's own occupation, even though one may perform it imperfectly, than to accept another's occupation and perform it perfectly. Duties prescribed according to one's nature are never affected by the sinful reactions. Text 48. Sahajam karma kaunteya sadosho sadosham apinatyajet sarvarambha hi doshena dhumenagnir ivavritaha. Every endeavor is covered by some fault, just as fire is covered by smoke. Therefore, one should not give up the work born of his nature, O son of Kunti. Even such work is full of faults. So these two verses, again, we talked about the other thing, that if you are engaged in your natural mode of work, which is suitable to your nature, then you should better continue it, even if there are apparent imperfections in that kind of work, rather than to say that, maybe I can do better. Or if your natural position is that of a brahmana, then if you come under the greed of money, you may say, maybe I need to start my own business. And, I have to earn a lot of money. Maybe it's not your nature to be a vaishya or to start your own business, because you are just under the sway of money rather than acting out of your own nature. And the Lord says, even if your nature, you are not making that much money, it's better to be situated in that particular work rather than actually make a lot of money. Because as a very startling example was Shraddha Mataji pointing out the other day, because she works in Oracle. She said that her vice president is making tons of money, but they are always so unhappy about their job. Yes, Mataji, you want to elaborate on that?
Not on the internet.
No,
I was just saying in general, not necessarily my vice president.
In general,
I've noticed that, you know, one would think that that vice presidents, they get all the company stock and they sell like million stock of Oracle, which translates into like millions and millions. But then from morning they are complaining, and you know, so where does, you know, from where
right.
does it end? Where does it end?
Right.
It doesn't really give
right.
happiness at all.
And if one is working according to one's own nature, then one is happy as long as you are not under the sway of, you know, other things.
Yes, and I also liked your point where you said that you stay in whatever comes naturally to you. Like if you are a Shudra and you like serving, then it's better to be in service than to start your own business. And that kind of ties to how many startups, you know, how many
right.
startups just fail like that
right.
because they are not Vaishyas by nature.
Nature, true.
To do that.
Nice.
Yeah.
And then we have seen also, yeah, go ahead. No.
I was just going to add to Mataji. I was just thinking that I personally know so many people in among my relations and friends who are, I don't know, as Krishna puts them in the Brahmin position, I'm not saying that they are really Brahmins, but they are born so-called
right.
into Brahmin families,
right.
Brahma bandhus. So when they start the thing and then you think that, you know, you got to get a lot of money and stuff like that, they're all in loss. And, you know, it's like maybe they did make money, but it evens out.
Mm.
Like, for example, if I get so many $1,000s a month, they got double or triple of that one time. But now they don't even get half of it. Now they don't
right.
even get half of what I get. So it's basically evens out.
Right.
Krishna has given them what they had to get, but there will be a point when they will be lower, and then again they have to work hard to get it. So it's so nice to know that. Yeah, it is very amazing that I never knew that, whatever profession we take, Krishna has actually given us, which is a new point. I never knew.
Yeah, that's a nice point, yeah. And Krishna, yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, like, you know, that thing we have to keep on reminding ourselves all the time that it's Krishna who's doing,
right, right.
doing everything for us, and not ourselves.
True.
This is Krishna has been telling me two times in 1 week. When I for the first time I thought that maybe I have to move my job, so I was. I mean, not that I'm unhappy with my job, but then there are people who want to pay me more, so. I'm very happy. I'm able to do a lot of service and do everything and with no tensions at this moment with Krishna's mercy. But I was just thinking in my mind how mine goes. Then I was just in two minds. I said, no, it will take away my time that I'm able to give Krishna. Then I'm just trying to think, no, I don't need that money. It's scary. So I was asking Krishna, what should I do? So in two instances, I got the answer. Now from Prabhuji and earlier from another Prabhuji. So yeah, thank you.
Nice, thank you. It's just Krishna, we are discussing Gita and answers come out. We just need to discuss Gita. And also Krishna says that, don't think that any work is perfect. You know, this work is perfect. You know, they pay less, they pay more, work less, or, you know, this, you know, Vaishya means like I have to tell lies. It's just gut-wrenching my soul that I have to tell lies. I have to wheel deal. I have to do these things to get money. I'll be a Brahman. It's mode of goodness, nice. It's, you know, peaceful, people get respect. Don't. That's your nature. Even if you go become a Brahmana, you will think after doing the sacrifice how much money people are giving me. Because that's your nature, you go like that. And Krishna says that every endeavor is with fault. Even a Brahmana, he has to kill animals. At least he used to kill animals. And he has to chastise others to kind of maintain that. And for a Vaishya, for a Kshatriya, he has to kill others. He has to send somebody to death for capital murder or something like that. He has to tell lies as a part of diplomacy. So many things are there. Every endeavor in this world is covered with fault.
I have a question, Prabhu.
Yes, Mataji.
So when Vaishyas say lies as a part of their profession, is that okay?
Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport. We'll read that purport real quick. And then... We take page 733, Mataji. And we should... we probably go... we'll read right from the top, the second paragraph, which is on page 733. Second paragraph. One should act to satisfy the Supreme Lord. For example, Arjuna was a Kshatriya. He was hesitating to fight the other party, but if such fighting is performed for sake of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there is no fear of degradation. In the business field also, sometimes a merchant has to tell so many lies to make a profit. If he does not do so, there can be no profit. Sometimes a merchant says, "Oh, my dear customer, for you I'm making no profit." But one should know that without profit, the merchant cannot exist. Therefore, it should be taken as a simple lie if a merchant says that he is not making profit. But the merchant should not think that because he is engaged in an occupation in which telling of lies is compulsory, he should give up his profession and pursue the profession of a brahmana. Does that answer your question, Mati? What's this? He's not acting according to his.
Like for example, somebody is like, have you talked about startups? Somebody does a startup and then tell lies and earns money. So then is that okay? Because he is in the business, but he is not a Vaishya.
Well, if you have taken up the profession of a Vaishya, then know for certain you are acting against your nature, which you will be unhappy over a period of time. But since you have taken up that, you are telling lies, which is, again, you are implicating yourself just for some material gains. And there is no tangible spiritual benefits to your activities.
So how do you know who you are? I mean, it's not by birth. So what I was saying was that to choose the career that you're going to make, it will be a decision that you'll take very early in life. You know, like 15, 16, even 12 years of age.
Yeah, but Mataji, there are two things though. In this modern world, it is difficult to know who you are. The reason being, there is no infrastructure set up so that brahmanas can be brahmanas, vaishyas can be vaishyas. If there is a government, ideal government, then they would be already having an infrastructure in place wherein vaishyas can trade, and wherein there is, when the child is born and the child grows up in a gurukula, they see the tendency and traits of the child, and then they are sent to particular thing. So the infrastructure should be in place, and there should be teachers, expert teachers, who are at least themselves knowledgeable in this science to know the qualities. Krishna gives so much of information on what brahmanas are, what kshatriyas are, what vaishyas are, what shudras are, what is the modes of material nature they are under. If a teacher himself or herself does not know these things, how can they spot? And even if they spot, where is the infrastructure to actually develop brahmanas, develop vaishyas, develop kshatriyas? Everything is become so mixed up. Here the ruling class becomes the rulers just by votes. And anybody can just, without training, whether he's a kshatriya, a brahmana, or a shudra, or even a verse, he can just run for the post of president with no like real training. So the whole modern world is very difficult. And Srila Prabhupada writes in Bhagavatam, because this Kali Yuga is so complicated, it is practically not possible to follow all the rules and regulations of Varnashram in this age. So we take it that whatever profession we are engaged in by service of Krishna, and we just do our best to be in that profession. That's my take on that, Mataji.
And I was also thinking that a lot has also got to do with the association.
You're right.
Because, like, you know, if Sukeshwari Mataji was to come and ask me, like, you know, I have got two choices. One is a good paying job, and another is where I'll do the sadhana. I will tell her, you know, stick with your current job and don't change it. But then that doesn't happen in 90% of the time. The
Correct.
People we are associating, they'll all say, are you crazy? Leave the job. You might. What will happen to your kids? You know, all those things. So, and it starts from the childhood. Like, you know, if you don't take up a job which is according to your qualifications, like, you know, they will give you so much of hell. Like, you know, what are you doing? You're wasting your time. You're a useless person. And, you
right.
know. Yeah. So it is difficult.
Yeah. So we stopped at text 48, and then we should go on 49. The Lord, just before we move to 49, the Lord gives the example of fire and smoke, that every fire there is some smoke, just like every endeavor is covered with some fault, but one shouldn't give up. Oh, because there is some smoke, I won't perform fire sacrifice. Sorry. You know, there is smoke here. It has to be pure. No, that's the way it is. You still do it. Text 49 on page 734 or 735. Asakta buddhi sarvatra chitatma vigata spriha naishkarmya siddhim paramam sanyasenadi gacchati. One who is self-controlled and unattached and who disregards all material enjoyments can obtain, by practice of renunciation, the highest perfect stage of freedom from reaction. Text 50. Siddhim prapto yatha brahma tatapnoti nibodame samase naiva kaunteya nishta jnanasya yapara. O son of Kunti, learn from me how one who has achieved this perfection can attain to the supreme perfectional stage, Brahman, and the stage of highest knowledge by acting in the way I shall now describe. So here the Lord talks about Nishkam Karma Yoga, and this kind of comes in line with our second chapter and the last verse. That's on page 7. Krishna extensively talks about Nishkam Karma Yoga and from the second chapter, the second part of the second chapter, and then he gives the famous verse, Karmanyeva Adhikaraste Ma Philesh Kadachana Ma Karma Palahetuhu Ma Te Changostini Karmani. He says that you have the right to perform your actions, but you have no right to get for the results, and neither you think that you are the cause of your results, nor can you abstain from action. And then at the end of the chapter he says, Esha Brahmi, this is on page 144, 12 square, 144. Esha Brahmi stiti partha nainam prapya vimuhyati stitpa syamanta kalepi brahma nirvanam ruchyati. That is the way of spiritual and godly life, after attaining which a man is not bewildered. If one is thus situated even at the hour of death, one can enter into the kingdom of God. So Krishna gives extensively about, he talks the same thing in this verse. He says on 849, he says, one who is self-controlled, page 735, one who is self-controlled and unattached and who disregards material enjoyments can obtain by practice of renunciation from the highest perfection of the freedom from reaction. And then the next verse, you can achieve the Brahman. So this is the confidential part of the Gita, which is one can attain to the Brahman realization. And Krishna talks about is more and more about the Brahman realization for next few verses. Text 51 through 53 on page 736, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Buddhya vishuddhaya yukto drityatmanam niyamyacha shabdadin vishayam styaktva ragadvesho yudasyacha vivikta sevi lagvasi yata vakkaya manasaha jnana yoga paro nityam vairagyam samuparshitaha ahankaram balam darpam kamam krodam parigraham vimuchya nirmama shanto brahma bhuyaya kalpate. Being purified by his intelligence and controlling the mind with determination, giving up the objects of sense gratification, being freed from attachment and hatred, one who lives in a secluded place, who eats little, who controls his body, mind and power of speech, who is always in trance and who is detached, free from false ego, false strength, false pride, lust, anger and acceptance of material things, free from false proprietorship and peaceful, such a person is certainly elevated to the position of self-realization. So Krishna gives the gradual stages that you perform the Nishkam Karma Yoga, means you give up the fruits of your work and be detached. Then Krishna says that you get into all these things, you get into the Brahman realization. Yes, Mataji.
I was just going over the purport, Prabhu. I just wanted to mention. So as we were discussing the before 47, Prabhupada says in the purport that anything done for personal sense gratification is a cause of bondage. So because I was just having that question in my mind that, you know, like how the Kshatriyas would, you know, lie, or somebody would lie, and how. But the answer is given by Prabhupada in the purport. So he says anything done by personal sense gratification.
Right.
So if I'm cheating somebody because I'm going to gain something.
Right.
And not as a process of the whole thing, then it's a cause of bondage.
Nice. Yeah,
thank you.
So, text 54, the famous verse on page 738. Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma na sochati na kankshati sava sarveshu bhuteshu mad bhaktim labhate param. One who is thus transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments nor desires to have anything. He is equally disposed towards every living entity. In that state, he attains pure devotional service unto me. So Krishna has a series of steps telling how you first be situated in Varanashram Dharma, you give up the activities, then purify yourself, then you will come to the stage of Brahman realization. Now, after coming to the stage of Brahman realization, then it is not the end all and be all of spiritual life, but at that point only can you perform devotional service unto me. One might question, so we are performing devotional service, but we haven't done everything else that Krishna asked. Meaning to say that we haven't been situated in Varanashram Dharma, we haven't meditated, we haven't done so many things. The answer to that is, by mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he has given the access to devotional service without no pre-qualifications, with no preconditions. He didn't consider who was fit, who was unfit. He gave that right to perform devotional service to everybody. Now, because we haven't, sometimes that is why devotional service is a little bit alien. It seems alien. Because immediately we are not chanting, we are not getting that ecstasy when we are chanting Hare Krishna, and we are not completely enlivened sometimes. They are due to anarthas, but also that we are in the process of purifying ourselves. We have been given, for example, the appropriate example Srila Rupa Goswami uses is that a person who is in the jaundiced disease condition of life, so for something sweet, if you offer him something sweet, it tastes bitter. But the only way is to kind of take that bitter thing over and over again so that it becomes sweet. So similarly, when we are not in the platform of Brahmabhuta stage, we are in the process of devotional service. So this is Brahmabhuta state, and assume, not you, we, me, I'm here. So the point is, this is devotional service, which is more even higher than Brahmabhuta state. So we have to come up all the way to Brahmabhuta and then go here. Our goal is this. So when we are directly chanting, sometimes there could be some sort of, you can say, resistance from within to perform those things, because we are not on that level. But we have been given that qualification, and if we keep performing devotional service, then definitely we will attain. The question is, the other thing is this. Mahaprabhu gave, he gave us Krishna. He didn't give us Paramatma, he didn't give us Brahman. He said, surrender to Krishna. Krishna is your goal. Krishna, specifically he said Krishna. So when we have to attain Krishna, Brahman realization is just not enough. Or that is not the ultimate realization. Sukhdev Goswami will attest to that fact. The four Kumaras will attest to that fact, that they were on this Brahman platform, completely equipoised, detached from material nature. They didn't even care about any sort of material allurement or entanglement. We read in Bhagavatam that Sukhdev Goswami, he was 16 years old and his body was fully developed, and he was walking past a body of water where naked women were taking their bath. Now, this scene, if you picture Shukdev Goswami walking past this body of water, was when he was leaving home. And Vyasdev was following right behind, crying him for him to come back. Now, he passed, Shukdev Goswami passed that body of water. The naked women who were bathing did not take the effort to cover themselves. The reason it is explained is that Shukdev Goswami, through his vision, they could understand that he had no concept of bodily platform of life. He never saw them as somebody, as women. He was completely aloof to that concept. Yet, the point is, unless one comes to the platform of pure devotional service, one cannot understand Krishna. And even being on the Brahman platform is no guarantee of that one can understand Krishna. And Krishna clarifies that further and further, because he has given confidential instructions. He says, these are the modes of material nature. You go beyond the modes of material nature. You come to the Brahman platform. Now what? There is more. We'll go more. Text 55. Bhaktya mam abhijanati yavan yaschasmi tattvatah tato mam tattvato jnatva vishate tad anantaram. One can understand me as I am, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, only by devotional service. And when one is fully conscious of me, by such devotion, he can enter into the kingdom of God. So this is the reason we have the devotional service is important, because that is the only means to attract Krishna. Text 56. Any questions so far before we go? All right. Thank you. Text 56. Sarva karmanyapi sada kurvano mat vyapashrayaha mat prasadat avapnoti shashvatam padam avyayam. Though engaged in all kinds of activities, my pure devotee under my protection reaches the eternal and imperishable abode by my grace. Text 57. Chetasa sarva karmani mai sanyasya matparaha buddhi yogam upashritya matchitta satatam bhava. In all activities, just depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. Text 58. Matchitta sarva durgani mat prasada tarishyasi atachetvam ahankaram na shroshyasi vinangshyasi. If you become conscious of me, you will pass over the obstacles of conditioned life by my grace. If, however, you do not work in such consciousness but act through false ego, not hearing me, you will be lost. So Krishna clearly gives these steps, saying that just take shelter of me, work under my guidance, you will cross over all your obstacles. Life will be easy, life will be sublime, life will be simple. But he gives a warning. Again, he's not threatening. He's not like, do it as me. He says, it's up to you. But if you don't, you should know the repercussions also. Because that's the law. Wherever there is a law, he says that if you do this, then you have to face this. And so that kind of holds the person from not committing a crime. If you go on the road, you will see, jump the red light, you have to pay $381 or $500, how much ever it is. That's a lot of money, and I don't want to. Similarly, Krishna says that if you don't listen to my words and then you just act on the platform of false ego, you'll be lost. You'll be lost in the sense that you'll be lost to yourself. You'll be lost to nobody but to yourself, because you will forget what is your actual purpose of life. And Krishna says, if we go back to the second chapter, we get the cycle. Vyayato vishyan pumsaha sangasteshu pajayate sangat sanjayate kama kamat krodho vijayate krodat bhavati sammohat sammohat smutir vibramaha smutir bhamshat buddhinashat pranashyati. Again, you will again fall down to the cycle of birth and death, because your intelligence is lost. He gives a series of progression from contemplation of objects of senses. Lust arises. From lust, anger arises. From anger, delusion. From delusion, loss of memory, loss of intelligence. And then you will fall down. You will be lost to yourself. People in this world, they don't have even the faintest idea. Where am I? What am I coming from? What am I doing here? Where am I going? Nope. It's just the whole life is past. Whole lifetimes is past. Whole billions of lifetimes is past. Just doing their things. it's lost, because there is no, the purpose of life is not awakened within their heart. So that's what Krishna says. Please be careful, he says. Text 59. Then again, Arjuna might say, fine, if you are saying I act through my false ego, I won't even act through my false ego. I won't listen to you, I won't act through my false ego. Then what? Krishna answers that next. Yad ahankaram ashritya na yotsya iti manyase mityaisha vyavasayaste prakriti stvam niyokshati. If you do not act according to my direction and do not fight, then you will be falsely directed. By your nature, you will have to be engaged in warfare. Text 60. Svabhava jena kaunteya nibadda svena karmana kartum nechasi yan mohat karishasi avashopitat. Under illusion, you are now declining to act according to my direction, but compelled by work born of your own nature, you will act all the same, O son of Kunti. So Krishna says, you know, when you say that I won't listen to you and I won't act, still that desire that I won't act is coming from your false ego. And Krishna says, no, can't do, because you have that nature. You are helplessly going to act according to your nature. And whether you want to voluntarily act according to my directions or you just want to helplessly act pulled by the material nature is up to you. Because in these verses, Krishna clearly says, you know, don't think that if you disobey me, then things are all right. No, they are not all right.
So if a person is acting under the, forced to act under the modes of material nature, then what happens to the free will thing there?
The Lord here clearly gives the choices. He says, either you act according to my direction, or you act according to the false ego. So if you act according to my directions, he gives a whole bunch of verses previously saying that you will be conscious of me, you will cross over the material nature, and there are so many positive things he says. But if you don't do that, then you are falsely directed and then you will be lost. So there is that free will to act according to Krishna's directions or to not act according to Krishna's directions. But just a common sense is that if you break the laws of the state, you are forced to act according to the rules of prison. There is no way around it. Yes? That's it. I mean, like, you have a choice to not act in a criminal way or to act in a criminal way. But if you act in a criminal way, the consequences are yours to choose or yours to bear. So similarly, whether you want to act according to Krishna's words or act according to your own or reject his words is your free will. But one should at least understand that by rejecting Krishna's words, you are putting yourself into a complicated situation of birth and death. And if you want to choose that way, sure. One should understand that material life, it is not like there is like a fear. There is certainly a fear factor. There is no doubt about it. That if you choose to reject Krishna's words, then fear definitely is going to creep in you because you are in the conditioned state. Bhagavatam says, bhayam dvitiya abhinivesha. That's a very nice word. We will see that. That also gives the contrast between here is the God, here is like, you know, not to act. We'll read that verse. It's nice just even to look at it and to, I believe it's in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. If you look in the shloka books, I think we should find it. Bhayam dvitiya abhinivesha tasyat. Thank you so much, Prabhuji. 265, thank you. Page 265. Bhayam dvitiya abhinivesha tasyat ishadapetasya viparyayo smriti tanmayayato buddha abhajetam bhakyai kayesham guru devatatma. Fear arises when a living entity misidentifies himself as material body because of absorption in the external illusory energy of the Lord. When the living entity thus turns away from the Supreme Lord, he forgets his own constitutional position as the servant of the Lord. This bewildering, fearful condition is affected by the potency for illusion called Maya. Therefore, an intelligent person should engage unflinchingly in the unalloyed devotional service of the Lord under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, whom he should accept as his worshipable deity and as his very life and soul. So this again gives that if you choose to live in this material world, then there is a fear factor you have to live with. Also, there is some happiness, because Srila Rupa Goswami says in Nectar of Devotion, there are three kinds of happiness. The happiness from material world or material sense pleasure or sense gratification, then happiness on the Brahman platform, and happiness from pure devotional service. So it is not that in the material world there is no happiness at all. Otherwise, the living entities wouldn't live. People wouldn't live in this world. Just imagine a person in utter ignorance of spiritual life, if there is no happiness, there would be mass suicides, because there is no worth living. There is that hope, that desire for pleasure is completely lost. But there is some happiness in this world, very little. And the problem with that happiness is the soul tries to chase that happiness. It gets the little bit of happiness, but that happiness quickly disappears, replaced by miseries. And then we need some sort of new other happiness, run after it. And again, this whole cycle goes on. Because the soul has nothing to do with this material world. Nothing to do with any sort of happiness. The happiness really lies in being situated in my spiritual position, either in the Brahman state or as a pure servant of the Lord. And if you do the maths, Srila Rupa Goswami says that being the servant of the Lord in pure devotional service is countless times more sweeter, more better, more joyful than even on the Brahman platform. What to speak of material happiness, which is like maybe a drop compared to Pacific Ocean. So if there is a Pacific Ocean and if there is one drop of water, then we can see what is the happiness which we are deriving. And then we can say, yeah, this is better. Devotional service is better.
So, Prabhuji, when we say the living entities under the modes of material nature, is it right to understand that it is his mind and intelligence that are in those modes? Who actually is under the modes?
The living entity is under the modes. The living entity has misidentified himself as those body, mind, intelligence. Okay. I'm intelligent. My mind is, I have this mental determination, I have mental stamina, energy, Then, my ears, they are ears, my ears are ears like a dog, I can even pick up. The thing is that living entity's misidentification is hovering on the mental platform. Sometimes it is the body, sometimes it's the mind, sometimes the senses, sometimes the intelligence. But that's it. Krishna says that, finer than the gross senses as the mind, and then finer than the intelligence. But that's the point for the material conditioned soul. They can't go beyond that, which is the soul proper. That inquiry happens only when you take up the spiritual life. So, when those activities are just rotating in those particular things, you are still under the modes of material nature. Because material modes are acting upon you and you are being just dragged by one place to another with no real solution.
So, Prabhuji, when we decide to pursue the will of the Lord, then that is actually transcendental, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And the modes will slowly stop acting.
Okay. Okay.
And then you will be situated on the platform of spiritual existence, and you'll slowly realize, I have nothing to do with this body. I have nothing to do with these senses. My mind's desires are just imaginations. My plans, my intelligence, which are making plans for happiness, is again a bogus propaganda, which I have nothing to do with. My actual position is service of the Lord. And then you become undisturbed, even though the mind and the modes of nature are acting, you will become undisturbed. It's not that they'll completely stop acting and then you are like free. In one sense, maybe you are. But then a few examples are that, Maharaj Rahugana, Jadabharat, is a famous example from Srimad Bhagavatam. When he was chastised by Maharaj Rahugana, or when he was like ridiculed by him, then Bhagavatam says that there was a disturbance in his mind. It was not that he was not feeling any... he became a stone with no feeling whatsoever when he was being chastised. He was feeling, but because of his being on such an elevated platform, he couldn't, or he didn't get reacted, or he didn't react to that, knowing that I have nothing to do with the insults which are being heaped upon me at this point of time. Krishna says the same thing in the Gita, in the second chapter, 14th verse. Second chapter, 14th verse. Famous verse. Matra sparshastu kaunteya sitoshna sukha dukkha agama apayino nityas tamsti. Krishna says that, you know, it's not like the heat and cold won't act on you. Happiness and distress won't. They will act on you, but don't be disturbed. And actually Krishna's instructions so early on Gita seems a little bit too much. Things, happiness and don't be disturbed. And if somebody says, you know, sir, I'm hurting so much, don't be disturbed, it's okay. But Krishna later, he gives us, when he reveals the Gita, then he gives you that the spiritual strength and the intelligence. Slowly we come to the platform, yes, that's nothing to do with me. Because I'm more and more situated on the spiritual platform, then you'll realize, yes, it's nothing to do with me. You'll get that strength. Yes, Ramana Sangha Prabhu.
Is that the case even to the liberated persons? For example, take the situation of Sukadeva Goswami, who is already liberated, or take even the one who is greater than him, who is already there. And if that person is insulted, he comes here and he comes to in front of me and I insult him because we are all ignorant.
God forbid, never it happens. Okay. Anyway, go ahead.
But are they even affected? My question is, do they even feel like heat and cold? They have an effect on them, but still they tolerate it. Is it the way they feel it? Or they don't even take that because they're completely liberated?
Well, there are few ways of looking at. Story we learn from Chaitanya Charitamrita is Srivas Thakur. He was one of the most intimate, dear devotees of the Lord. And when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was performing his pastimes in Navadvip, at that time he held kirtan, but it was very private performance and it was behind closed doors. It was not for general public. And only those who were really pure at heart could actually come and witness this particular ecstatic performance of dancing by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now, few big shots of that village who thought that they were very respectable and learned and Brahminical class, they got offended by this sort of behavior. We are big people of this village and we are pure at heart and we are learned in scriptures. We are not being invited. So what they did was, at that time, Navadvip also was a big center for this tantric pujas and worships. And so they collected all the paraphernalia for this tantric puja and they put it in front of Srivas's house. And next day, they kind of called the town, the village people, and they said, look, what these people are doing all night long. They drink alcohol and other wine and other intoxicating beverages. They kidnap young girls and they have like these tantric rites and other immoral activities going on behind that closed doors. See the proof here. This is all lying here. And then Srivas could have said, you know, what nonsense are you talking? He never protested. He actually said, oh, these are only few people here. He called more people. Look, you know, see the gentleman of village. Just see. This is my nature. You know, I'm like this. But the point is that, you know, he never protested. Because it's also said in the Bhagavatam that it's a very beautiful verse in Bhagavatam. It's something which is dear, is that a devotee, there are some things, if he's murdered, cheated, insulted, neglected, ignored, he doesn't counteract even though he has the power to do so. Because they think it as will of Krishna. They see that everything, If every blade of grass moves by will of Krishna, then every chastisement, every harsh words being spoken to others must be by will of Krishna. So they take it in that sense and they do not protest, because they know by protesting that they are protesting against the will of the Lord itself. The other verse, which is very nice in tune, is 11th chapter, 11th canto, 7th chapter, 37th verse. I don't think we have it in shloka book, but it says, Bhutair akramyamanopi daiva deva avashanugai. The gist of that verse is that if you are harassed by other living entities, a learned person sees that those who are harassing me are also acting under some superior power. They are not acting on their own to harass me. So when he sees that connection, then he is not deviated from that path. Otherwise, you become a victim. Why me? I was such a nice person. He's harassing me. He's my enemy. He has to be destroyed. And you know, I have to vilify him. No, you don't do that. So it's a progressive realization that happens, that we come to that stage. Again, artificially, you can't come to that stage either. And one cannot kind of just try to imitate also. Because internally, your heart is completely crushed with that injustice or harsh treatment or behavior meted out by others. So, yes.
My question is really is, let's say someone speaks harsh words, and that might hurt that someone might speak, let's say, harsh words to me, and they have an effect on me. Although I'm not happy with it, but I tolerate. I just, you know, let's say. But my question is, if a liberated person is there, and he and someone speaks harsh words against him, is it that, you know, he doesn't feel good but he tolerates? Is that in that condition, or he doesn't even bother because he's not even seeing the material elements here? He's just seeing the spiritual souls everywhere.
It's hard to tell, because this was the question which was asked by Shraddha Mataji few months before. And the answer to that is, because they are self-controlled externally, it's hard to know their emotions. In some cases, they are just like, you know, they add to it. Like Srivast Thakur's reaction was very apparent. He said, you know, just see, this is what I am. And our Guru Maharaj also says that, you know, if somebody comes to you and says, I heard this thing wrong about you, I heard this fault about you, and that's all you heard? I have so many faults, I can just sit on hours together describing about you my faults. So, again, we can't do it in an imitative fashion, but it's hard to tell if they are genuinely, like, you know, feeling bad about it, or if they are completely, like, you know, thinking as Krishna's will. Only few places we know. For example, the other instance is Haridas Thakur. Now, the Muslim magistrate, he forbade him. You born in a Muslim family, how are you chanting the names of these Hindu gods? You cannot. And then Haridas Thakur was firm, and he was put into jail. They said he was still not giving up. In fact, the problem was happening was that those who were in jail, he was making them chant also. And it became so bad that respectable people were doing crimes just to go into prison to get association of Haridas Thakur. Then the Qazi was really flummoxed, now what to do. And then they said, they said, we'll subject him, we'll punish him by death. And he's to be beaten until he's dead. And then he was taken through 22 marketplaces, and he was being beaten by the soldiers. Every time he was being beaten, he was feeling so sorry for the people who were beating him. He was praying constantly to Krishna, please, you know, they don't know what they are doing. Please forgive them for their offenses. Please. And that is an extreme example of tolerance. The Haridas Thakur exemplifies that level of tolerance and humility. That is one level. The other level is that they feel, but they tolerate. So there is a whole spectrum in between that reactions can happen. But in any case, they don't like think they are victim. They don't think that somehow, you know, I've been like persecuted and injustice has been done to me. So, okay. By will of Lord, it happens. It happens. At least theoretically, you know, it's hard to start that right away. But at least theoretically, if you have that faith, slowly, you know, that realization also will come about. By our sadhana, it will just strengthen that.
Thank you, Prabhupada.
Thank you. Please.
Yeah, I was just thinking what Prabhuji said, that if suppose somebody chastises someone in Goloka, the person who chastises is anyway here. He has a spot here. And person who doesn't feel for it is probably remaining there, right?
Yeah, that's a hypothetical thing for probably, right?
And I was also thinking about a small analogy. Like people at a liberated stage, they consider all people like me that they are like kids, you know. Like when you are like when you have a baby in your tummy, the baby kicks you. Or even after the baby is born, the baby kicks the mom or dad. But we don't think that that kick is actually a kick, like in another person kicking you. You think that it is that ignorance, unknown thing that the child is doing it on you. You don't take it very seriously. So I'm thinking that, you know, in the span of all the lives, and like it's like probably a few seconds for them, a life on earth. The person kicks or tells something, probably doesn't really, they don't really care for it.
Nice. Thank you.
Yeah, I had a question, Prabhu. Shuddha Tattva and Vishuddha Tattva, what do they mean and if there's a difference?
Mataji, I sent you the email.
Oh, you did today, yeah.
Yeah, can you, so you answer that, because that's... Can you please?
Actually, this was raised in our chat group, and Akrunath Prabhu had volunteered to follow that with Gopi Parandhan Prabhu, and he said they are the same thing. They mean one and the same thing. Shuddha and Vishuddha, both mean pure. Yes. And one of the question was that we should not say Vishuddha. We should just say Vishuddha. Like Vishuddha with a bigger I. It should not. It's not proper Sanskrit. That's the answer. So I forwarded to all of you. All of you on the chat. Yeah.
So Vishuddha.
Vishuddha.
We should say Vishuddha.
We should say.
All right. More so, questions?
Yeah. So, Prabhuji, I'm confused between Supreme Lord's sanction and Supreme Law's Lord's will. So the entity will decide to do this way or that way, right? And then after you decide, then still we have to have the sanction, right? Because he's the fifth, he's one of the elements in the five things that make an action. So Supreme Will and Supreme, when there is Supreme Will, there is sanction. So Lord will always sanction, right? Is that right
not
to think?
Necessary.
Not necessarily.
Okay. And sometimes he doesn't. He doesn't either fulfill the, or he doesn't. Okay. The point is that the Supreme Lord always awards the results of one's results. That is, we are not the creator of the results or the fruits of our actions. Now, to act or not act in a certain direction, there are five factors the Lord mentions. And if their desire is very strong, that the jiva wants to act in a certain way, even though the Lord from within is telling not to, then the Lord doesn't interfere and you have to face the consequences of your actions. But to the extent you are surrendered to Krishna, to that extent he controls and he directs you to act, not act in that way. For example, if Krishna, what's a good example? I think one example is, for example, a child going towards the fire. And Srila Prabhupada uses this example. Or a child wants to put the finger in a moving fan. And you say, no, don't do that. But if the child is adamant, then you say, okay, do it. And then you will experience yourself. Similarly, to that extent, Krishna gives you direction from within. Or whether you choose to actually accept it or not is up to you. So it's not like jiva is completely under control of the Lord. Because one should realize that if Lord was the only sanctioning authority in the matter of acting, then jiva just becomes a stone, a robot, or a machine who just acts. But the jiva has also initiative or a free will, as the Lord has. And so there is a dynamic that's going on.
I was asking that question was like, if somebody is rude to me and if I'm saying, well, this is Lord's will, because of Lord's will, somebody is being rude to me. So is it Lord's will or is it Lord's sanction? Or because looking at it from the person who is rude, he made the decision to be rude despite the Lord telling him not to be rude.
It's hard. Yeah. Actually, it's hard to know even our impetus for action, where is it coming from? Is it I am acting from my own thing, or is the Lord kind of impelling me from within? Yeah, actually, because there are five factors at play. And those factors are very dynamic factors. So it's hard, our intelligence is not so fine that we can ascertain exactly what's happening there. So leave hard to speak of others. They are maybe just acting purely under their nature, or they are acting... In any case, we just take it like that. The other aspect I wanted to talk about is this. That doesn't mean that you just get kicked every time. That means you just take it lying every time. No, that's not the fact either. Because we have this story from our scriptures wherein Narada, he a snake becomes the disciple of Narada. You know that story? Right? Yeah. The snake becomes the disciple of Narada. The snake was previously a vicious snake and he had bitten many people in the village and the villagers were afraid of him. And Narada, takes mercy on this particular snake and the snake becomes pious. And then he goes back to the village. He's not like threatening anybody. He's not like puffing or huffing or showing his fangs. He's very gentle. But the people misunderstand. And they start throwing stones at him. They start abusing, insulting words at him. And the snake can't take it. He says, this is too much. And he goes back to Narada saying that, you know what, you asked me like this. Now my life has become like a rotting, miserable hell. Well, Narada said, I asked you not to kind of not cause injury to anybody. I never said to defend you, not to defend yourself. So just, you know, raise your hood and show them your fangs, but don't bite them. So sometimes one has to adopt that. Otherwise, if people think unfortunately, that's the nature of this world. When you are dealing with materialistic people, and if they think you are soft-hearted and to be taken advantage of, they will. If you just show that you are firm and you know you are not going to take it lying down, then they'll back off. Yeah. So in this world, it happens both the ways. It's not just a one-way thing. A Vaishnava doesn't mean just take it lying down. In fact, the whole theme of Gita, Arjuna wanted to take it lying down. What do I need this kingdom for? You know, that's okay. I'll go to forest. I live by begging. If I win this kingdom, it's tainted with blood. I don't want this kingdom. So he said, I'm okay. Let them like kill me. And he says, I don't know. Even if they want to kill me on the battlefield, even I'm unarmed, I'm okay. But Krishna said, no, you're just talking like a crazy person. Go fight. So there are both the ways. It's not just a one-way traffic here. So, but the principle is something which one should be firmly situated, is that the more we tolerate, and we have the capacity to tolerate, the more we make spiritual advancement. That's the goal.
I just want to make sure what I understood, Prabhu. So is it that when we are surrendered to Krishna, like how Mataji asked this question, that sometimes we're not too sure, like our own impetus, we don't know whether we're doing it or Krishna's doing it. Isn't this true that for souls who are very pure, who are completely Krishna conscious, who depend totally on Krishna, whatever they do, it's like if you have a 100% mark, if you're 50% surrendered, then 50% of what you're doing is Krishna's will and 50% your will. Isn't it that for like pure devotees, 100% they're surrendered to Krishna? So whatever they're doing, entailing and saying, is everything directly coming from Krishna. So is that understanding right?
Well, your 100% understanding is right, but not the 50%.
Okay.
Krishna is not a businessman. You know, I'll surrender to you 50%. Help me out 50%. You know, the other 50%. You know, I got to do my own thing.
I understand.
The thing is, to the extent, Krishna is not forced to act according to what your calculations are. Ye yatha mam prapadyante. He says that in Gita, but the fact is that he can choose in whatever way he wants to protect. That's not necessarily that, you know, Draupadi was a surrendered soul. Why did Krishna let her suffer that short brief time where she was utterly like to the point where she had to completely surrender. Couldn't Krishna even prevent this from happening, even to kind of save her from that, you know, humiliating situation? You know, to what point, at what point, till what extent he will reciprocate is up to him. We can't force the Lord.
Like for me, Prabhuji, I'm not 100% surrendered, I know that. So I'm thinking, how is, like, it is so hard to think that what is Krishna helping me? And I know that, you know, when somebody, like, for example, Prabhuji, somebody blasphemes me, I think that, okay, you know, I had to get this part, you know. And it is easy for me to think like that when a devotee does that to me. And I will not take it seriously if a devotee does it. But if a non-devotee does the same thing at work, I probably wouldn't take it the same way. So...
Well, probably you should... Again, there are appropriate ways. You cannot just kind of take everything like that. If you are not there, then, you know, we have to take appropriate things. Either you have to defend yourself, or you have to kind of intelligently figure out the situation and try to do to see what steps can be taken. It's not just one way. The point is, at least not on the level, unless one is really, really advanced, one cannot simply take everything lying down either. So if somebody at work is kind of consistently harassing you because of certain things, then there are certain recourses you can take to address that problem. It's not just, you know, it's happening by will of God. If you are being targeted to do, or if you are being asked to do something illegal, or if you are being like harassed by somebody who has more power than you and making your life miserable, you still have some recourse. So it's not the devotee cannot take recourses to that. So no, it's one way, not one way traffic. Text 61. Oh yes, Siri Babu.
I just want to add to the same point. Similar question I had,
and then one. I've been told one Bhagavatam shloka which has a fine meaning in it. 10.14.8.
Which page on the shloka book?
256.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. Yeah. We discussed that verse many times over, and last time also we discussed. Yeah, that's a very nice verse to bring up. Very nice verse. Thank you for bringing it. Tattenu kampam susumikshamano vunjana eva atmakritam vipakam. It's a very appropriate verse. For example, the other situation in this line is this, that there are unfounded allegations against ISKCON Silicon Valley devotees who are going and doing book distribution. What are you going to do? Are you going to, you know, dispute those charges and, like, you know, fight back, or are you going to take it lying down? See, so there are situations. The other aspect of it is who is being disreputed here. If it is just personal self, that's fine. I mean, you can blame me, you can, you know, insult me. It's just for my own thing, okay. But if you are, you know, blaspheming the devotees of the Lord or the Lord Himself, then I become the fire, and the exact same person, I'll become fire and try to go against you. I can't take it lying down. So again, there are so many nuances to a simple thing, whether to do or not to do. Excuse me. Text 61. That's a nice discussion we had. Page 745. And we move on to text 61. Again, coming into this line with whatever we are talking. Thank you, Prabhuji. Ishvara sarva bhutanam hriddeshe arjuna tishthati brahmayan sarva bhutani yantra rudhani maya. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated on a machine made of the material energy. Text 62. Tam eva sharanam gaccha sarva bhavena bharata tat prasadat param shantim sthanam prapsyasi shasvatam. O Scion of Bharata, surrender unto him utterly. By his grace you will attain transcendental peace and the supreme and the eternal abode. text 63, iti te jnanam akhyatam guhyat guhyataram maya vimrishaitad asheshena yathe chasi tatakuru. Thus I have explained to you knowledge still more confidential. Deliberate on this fully and then do what you wish to do. So here Krishna talks about confidential knowledge. This is the second phase of that, more confidential knowledge. And more confidential knowledge is surrendering onto the super soul. Krishna gives that the super soul is present in everyone's heart and is directing the wanderings of all the living entities. Meaning to say, he's putting him from one planet to another, to this situation, to that body. So there, the living super soul is directing the living entities. Brahmanda Brahmite Kono Bhagyavanji. So it's like, you know, the cycle of birth and death. And then the second thing is you surrender onto him and then you will achieve peace and you will achieve satisfaction. And the Lord concludes by saying, this knowledge of super soul, which I have described, is more confidential knowledge. Is there most confidential knowledge? We'll see. Text 64. And here also, Krishna gives, the other important point we have is that Krishna gives, do what you want to do. It's like you heard me, I gave you this knowledge, I'm not forcing you, it's up to you. Text 64. Ready for the most confidential knowledge, the essence of all Gita? Sarva guhya tamam bhuya shrunume paramam vachaha ishto sime dridam iti tato vakshami te hitam. Because you are my very dear friend, I am speaking to you my supreme instruction, the most confidential knowledge of all. Hear this from me, for it's for your benefit. Man mana bhavamad bhakto matyaji mam namaskaru mame vaishyasi satyam te pratijane priyosime. Always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, and offer your homage unto me. Thus you will come to me without fail. I promise you, because you are my very dear friend. Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha ishyami mashachaha. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. So these two verses constitute the most confidential instructions of Gita. The beauty of this particular verse, Sarva Dharman Parityajya, is even if the devotee is situated on a platform or in a situation or in a position or in a psychological state of mind where he is committing or there is a tendency to commit sinful reaction, Krishna says, I'll protect you. The beauty is that it's not like you have become so pure and now you have surrendered to Krishna. Even though you may be a little sinful, or there is a sinful tendency, or there is a situation, Krishna says, I will protect you from such a situation. Implicitly, he is saying that surrender unto me is going to take care of your tendency to commit sinful reactions. Even if you are and implicit in that statement is that even if you are sinful, do not worry, surrender unto me just. Don't think. Don't hesitate that because I am sinful, can I surrender to Krishna or not? He is the supreme most pure. He can take care. He can take charge. He can destroy any sinful reactions for any person. Why not his devotee? Is he incapable of doing that? No, he says, I can. Please understand this truth, that if Krishna gives his promise, nobody can thwart his promise. Nobody can put obstacles on his promise. That's his guarantee. Otherwise, in this world, nobody can give you a promise which they can without fail and absolutely keep it up. In this material world, nobody can actually give you that sort of reassurance Krishna gives. And all he asks is just surrender unto me. In fact, you should realize that this verse is the basis of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance. He says that, I said to people, surrender unto me, but actually I haven't showed them myself. I'll descend myself as a devotee and show what actually surrender to Sri Krishna is. There are internal reasons, of course, but the external reason is to show the surrender process. This is Krishna. And this constitutes the most confidential information of Srimad Bhagavad Gita. And if you have the complete faith in these two instructions, you know the essence of Gita. Shall we go ahead, complete, and we'll take more questions? Text 67. Idam te nata pakshaya na bhaktaya kadachana na chashushrave vachyam na chamam yo bhi na chamam yo bhya suyati. This confidential knowledge may never be explained to those who are not austere or devoted or engaged in devotional service, nor to one who is envious of me. Text 68. Yes. No, that's fine.
Regarding this abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me, I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions, do not fear.
Yes.
We see that now there are some devotees who have surrendered to Krishna fully, in the sense that they dedicated their 100% of the time to the ISKCON movement, for example. But then later on they leave and then go on doing whatever they were doing before.
Mm.
How does this thing happen? Because at one point they fully surrendered, but now they are out of it.
One should understand is that surrender is not an external activity of the soul. It's an internal activity. It's the state of heart. A person who is 100% within ISKCON, fully dedicated to the service of society, might not necessarily be a surrendered soul at heart. It could be that they have dedicated their life, but if it, either due to some offenses or due to some overwhelming of material desires, they may leave service of Krishna, and there is a free will to do that. So surrender is more of an internal state of heart. And also is the fact that if you at least surrender to Krishna once and you are in the beginning process, even if you leave service of Krishna, still that taste and that feeling of surrender you got from Krishna, he will make sure that it never leaves your heart. And sooner or later, you will say this material world is useless and you will again surrender to Krishna. Even though there is a fall down, you still go back and you will still have that urge to surrender to Krishna. One of the senior leaders of the ISKCON, he said, the most miserable people in this world are those who actually had surrendered to Krishna once and left his service. Because they couldn't fully get the taste and the joy of devotional service, and now they are back into the material world doing their own thing, and they are neither finding happiness there. So they are the most miserable people. The misery that Krishna puts you in is to just give you more impetus to surrender unto him. So, again, it's not like, okay, I have 100% my time in ISKCON. I'm completely protected. Is a rather misleading conception, because it doesn't just mean that Krishna will protect you because you are in ISKCON. Of course, association of devotees, and we have to do and serve, and that way definitely is the way to get mercy. But it's more of an internal thing, how Krishna protects you from sinful reactions. He may either let you commit the sinful reaction, sinful activity, and then give you such miserable reaction to that you will say, why did I do it? Krishna is giving me so much of reaction to that. Or sometimes he may just stop you from doing that. Suppose if you want to do some illegal activity, there's something that happens that will actually stop you from doing that. For example, a person wants to, he's aware, but he still has this urge to, for example, drink some intoxicating beverage. If Krishna wants, he can protect by the car is breakdown, there's a flat tire if you want to go to the bar, bar is closed, something will happen that you can't actually do it. And sometimes it happens that Krishna lets you do it and then you'll get bad reactions. So what way he purifies you is up to him. There is no like fixed formula for Krishna, please. Never. He's independent. He can act the way he wants. But he always, without doubt, acts for the well-wishing of his devotees. Never ever he kind of acts against. He never cheats. He never misleads. He never subverts. He's perfectly 100% pure well-wisher of his devotee. That is Krishna. But he can act in the way he chooses. Because he's a supreme intelligence. And he knows exactly how you can be rectified. And because that's why he's Jagat Guru or Supreme Guru. And he'll act accordingly. He'll give you that. So, that faith is there. And the faith in Krishna's words that is going to bring us all auspiciousness. Yes, Rakshit.
This very important verse, whenever it comes up, there are actually two considerations that come up for me. One is Krishna is saying, give up all these forms of religion. And in the purport, it says everything that Krishna has talked about until now, he's telling Arjun, give that up. All this knowledge and yoga and everything that he has said in the prior chapters, he's now telling him, give that up. So it raises question for someone whether anyone can make anything of what Krishna has said earlier in the context of discussion. Like, for example, what is knowledge? And then you say in the 13th chapter, Krishna says, you know, you are not the body, you are the living soul, and I'm there with you in the heart as the super soul. And we often, when somebody asks what is knowledge, we cite that and quote that with a lot of authoritative citation from the Bhagavad Gita. But now here it is said, give all that up. When somebody would just look at the translation, abandon all varieties of religion, it would appear that he's saying, you know, some religion like worshipping demigods and worshipping a stone or something. It could be anything. And practice my religion, which is that verse that follows afterwards, the manmana bhava, a word that precedes before, right. Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyagyai mam namaskuru mam aveshyasi satyam te pratijane priyosime, which devotees often cite as the verse that makes a call for devotional service to him, or right. What devotional service is. So it is not that he's saying abandon these religions, that you may be worshipping a demigod or something that is impersonal. He's even saying that forget about everything that I've said until now and surrender to me. So it's a significant statement that stands out. That was just a comment about it. And then the other thing is, and then he's saying surrender unto me. Abandon first of all these things and surrender unto me. People often ask, what is he asking when he says, surrender unto me? What is meant by that?
Is a question?
Yes.
Okay. Well, it's there in the purport. We can read particular... why don't we read this purport? If we can quickly just go through. 750, page 750 for those who are not there. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The Lord has described various kinds of knowledge and processes of religion, knowledge of the Supreme Brahman, knowledge of the Supersoul, knowledge of different types of orders and statuses of social life, knowledge of the renounced order of life, knowledge of non-attachment, sense and mind control, meditation, etc. He has described in so many ways different types of religion. Now in summarizing Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that Arjuna should give up all processes that have been explained to him. He should simply surrender unto Krishna. That surrender will save him from all kinds of sinful reactions, for the Lord personally promises to protect him. In the 7th chapter, it was said that only one who has become free from all sinful reactions can take up to the worship of Lord Krishna. Thus, one may think that unless he is free from all sinful reactions, he cannot take to the surrendering process. To such doubts, it is here said that even if one is not free from all sinful reactions, simply by the process of surrendering to Sri Krishna, he is automatically freed. There is no need of strenuous efforts to free oneself from sinful reactions. One should unhesitatingly accept Krishna as the supreme savior of all living entities. With faith and love, one should surrender unto him. The process of surrender to Krishna is described in Hari Bhakti Vilas 11.767. Anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam rakshasi yatiti vishvaso goptritve varanam tatha atma nikshepa karpanye shadvida priti sharana shadvida sharanagatihi. According to the devotional process, one should accept such religious principles that will ultimately lead to devotional service of the Lord. One may perform a particular occupational duty according to his position in the social order, but if by executing his duty one cannot or does not come to the point of Krishna consciousness, all his activities are in vain. Anything that does not lead to the perfectional stage of Krishna consciousness should be avoided. One should be confident that in all circumstances Krishna will protect him from all difficulties. There is no need of thinking how one should keep the body and soul together. Krishna will see to that. One should always think himself helpless and should consider Krishna the only basis of his progress in life. As soon as one seriously engages himself in devotional service to the Lord in full Krishna consciousness, at once he becomes free from all contamination. Well, to add to your point, here we have 6 processes of surrender unto Krishna, and then this is a big topic of itself, anukulyasya, taking up activities which are favorable to devotional service, giving up, then considering Krishna. These are the 6 processes of devotional service, the standard devotional service. We may not immediately happen all those things, but at least the first two are something which is forms of sadhana bhakti, is that we accept some things which are favorable, like chanting Hare Krishna, reading Srimad Bhagavatam, and then giving up other activities which are detrimental to our devotional service. So this is a form of surrender in sadhana bhakti.
So one would need to have the understanding of what is meant by surrender in order to surrender, correct? They would have to, because otherwise surrender would be like I bow down to Krishna and I say, well, you are the supreme, I am just your subject, and my life is up to you. Unless someone has the understanding of these processes that you're talking about, one could interpret surrender in any way, correct?
Correct. And actually, it is said in Ramayana that the Lord, even if once a devotee says, O Ram, I surrender unto you, then he completely takes charge of that particular person. So your statement that you bow down before the Lord and say, Lord, I give up, I surrender unto you, it's actually a starting point of surrender, and it's the right thing. Because even to come to that point, you should have that faith that Krishna is the object of surrender for me.
Right. So it would seem that faith is also a very important component.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely.
To be able to actually give one's life to the responsibility of somebody else.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's true. If you are a parent and then you have to go out and you have asked somebody to babysit your children, the amount of faith you need is tremendous just to allow that person to babysit your child. So if you are giving your own life to somebody else, of course. Thank you. Text 67, page 751. Idam te na tapasya. Oh, we completed this? We did, yes. So Krishna here gives, Krishna here gives some injunctions on whom to not reveal this particular supreme secret. Text 68. Ya idam paramam guhyam mad bhakteshu avidasyasi bhaktim mai param kritva mame vaishyasi asamshayaha. For one who explains the supreme secret to the devotees, pure devotional service is guaranteed, and at the end he will come back to me. Text 69. Na chatasman manusheshu kaschin me priyakrittamaha bhavita na cha me tasmad anya priyataro bhuvi. There is no servant in this world more dear to me than he, nor will there ever be one more dear. So this is a great hope and blessing of the Lord for those who explain this secret and also who give the secret out to others in the form of book distribution, that we go out and give Bhagavad Gita to others, and then that activity is pleasing to the Lord. Yes.
Sir, I ask this question to Akrunath Prabhu.
Yeah.
Because whenever we say preaching, we immediately tie it to the book distribution. That is the standard things that goes on in ISKCON. I see it many occasions. But here we are doing so many other things also. For example, we are maintaining the temple. Someone is decorating the deities. Someone is cooking for the deities. Someone is cleaning. Someone is making garlands. There are so many activities that are going on. Someone is maintaining the books. So do all these activities come under preaching and are covered by this verse here, or it is covering only the book distribution?
Well, you should understand that I take it this is question coming more personally from yourself, because you are doing all the things you mentioned right now. You're maintaining the temple, cleaning the temple, looking after the temple. But
he's doing book distribution also.
Book distribution also. The other thing is Krishna says, "Manmana bhavat bhakto madhyaji mamana." Don't. So that emphasis also is there. These are the confidential instructions. He says, "Do this, manmana bhavat bhakto," and you are doing that. That's a part of thing. Manmana bhavat bhakto madhyaji mam, worshipping the Lord. Part of the worship of the Lord is maintain His temple. So all these activities constitute pure devotional service. It is not just that those who go on book distribution, that's it. They are in, and everybody else is out. Because madhya worshipping me, madhyaji mam namaskuru, and to maintain this temple, because so many people come and offer obeisances, and to maintain that place of the Lord in of itself is such a pleasing activity, and this constitutes the most confidential instruction which the Lord is asking you to do. Because when you are doing the most confidential thing He is asking, the result is also the most confidential, which is becoming dear to Krishna. So it's just not that. Manmana bhavat bhakto madhyaji mam namaskaro. Did we memorize that verse for this semester? We memorized it, right? Is it one of the verses for memory? Manmana bhavat bhakto. Yes. Nice. So. Text 70. Adyeshyate ya ima adyeshyate cha ya imam dharmyam samvadam avayo jnana yajnena tenaham ishtasyam iti me matihi. And I declare that he who studies the sacred conversation of ours worships me by his intelligence. Text 71. Shraddhavan anusuyascha shrunayad apiyo naraha sopi mukta shubhal lokan prapnuyat punya karmanam. And one who listens with faith and without envy becomes free from sinful reactions and attains to auspicious planets where the pious dwell. Here, it's even if you don't have complete faith in Krishna, but just by listening to Bhagavad Gita, there are so much pious merits, the Lord says. And Krishna also says that those who study this, they worship me with their intelligence. So we exert our intelligence when we study Bhagavad Gita, when we come in association with devotees like this. This is also sort of aarti, but aarti and are meant using our intelligence for Krishna here, because we are discussing Bhagavad Gita. Text 72, here where Krishna asks, okay, so tell me. Text 72 on page 755. Kachit echat shrutam partha tvayai kagrena chetasa kachit ajnanam sammoha pranashtaste dhananjaya pranashtaste dhananjaya. O son of Pritha, O conqueror of wealth, have you heard this with an attentive mind? Are your ignorance and illusion now dispelled? And so, Krishna asks that, and Arjuna replies, Nashto moha, Arjuna vacha, Nashto moha smritir labdha, tat prasadan mayachyuta, sitosmi gata sandeha, karishye vachanam tava. Arjuna said, My dear Krishna, O infallible one, my illusion is now gone and I have regained my memory by your mercy. I am now firm and free from doubt and I am prepared to act according to your instructions. So here is the result of listening Bhagavad Gita or realizing Bhagavad Gita is there are benefits. Nashto moha means my illusion is destroyed. First thing, smritir labdha, I have regained my memory. And how? By your mercy. Tat prasad. This is an important point. Because people say that I read Bhagavad Gita and, you know, why are not, why? Because we have academic scholars and everybody who are reading Bhagavad Gita and who are like translating Gita and who have written editions and so much of words on Gita. Why is that they are not free from beyond the illusion? Here Arjuna says, Tvat prasadan mayachyuta. Your mercy also should be there. So one, unless one has that faith in Krishna, then one's fruit of reading Bhagavad Gita won't be available or won't be attainable. Otherwise, anybody can read Bhagavad Gita and say that, you know, I am a scholar. I know Bhagavad Gita. Krishna's mercy is not there. And sthitosmi, he says, I am situated now beyond doubts. I have no doubts. And I'm ready to act according to your instructions.
Just one question.
Yes.
Verse number
71. 71, okay.
71, it says, and one who listens with faith and without envy becomes free from sinful reactions.
Right.
And attains to the auspicious planets where the pious dwell. Here, the envy used in this verse refers to envy against Krishna or envy against Krishna and his devotees or something else also?
It is against Krishna. It's Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport. He writes clearly that it's explained here that although... I think we'll read the purport. It's short purport. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. In the 67th verse of this chapter, the Lord explicitly forbade the Gita's being spoken to those who are envious of the Lord. In other words, Bhagavad Gita is for devotees only. But it so happens that sometimes a devotee of the Lord will hold open class, and in that class, not all the students are expected to be devotees. Why do such persons hold open class? It is explained here that although not everyone is a devotee, still there are many who are not envious of Krishna. They have faith in him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If such a person hears from a bona fide devotee about the Lord, the result is that they become at once free from all sinful reactions and after that attain to the planetary system where all righteous people are situated. Therefore, simply by hearing Bhagavad Gita, even a person who does not try to be a pure devotee attains results of righteous activities. Thus, a pure devotee of the Lord gives everyone a chance to become free from sinful reactions and to become a devotee of the Lord. So, that, does that answer your question, Prabhu? Envious of Krishna. Thank you. Yes, Rakshit Prabhu.
Just a follow up on this. Envious of me, and the purport here clarifies it nicely that one may not be a devotee, yet is not envious of Krishna.
Right.
So, it is referring to some innocent people.
Nice.
Who are not atheists or agnostics. They don't have the knowledge, but they are neutral and amenable to take on to devotional service if properly preached.
Nice.
And the reference here is to preachers doing this, holding an open class where such people may be present. Like we may have members come into our congregation through a friend
who may just be innocent. So because the comment was made earlier about book distribution, it would seem that this would also apply when we are out on the field there, because we are not necessarily interacting with devotees.
Right.
And we are preaching to them.
Right.
And we are also assuming they are innocent.
Right.
That there is a chance they may take on to this.
Nice.
So I think that this, the purport here gives a better explanation of verse 67, because text 67 leaves the impression that you would only preach to devotees.
Nice.
And then it comes back here and tries to clarify that. Nice. I think. Yeah.
And also on book distribution, we have those who are on the intermediate stage of devotion, they try to avoid those who are completely envious and atheistic, and then we deal with them accordingly. Thank you. Okay. Text 74 on page 757. Sanjaya Uvacha, Ityaham Vasudevasya, Parthasya Cha Mahatmanaha, Samvadam Imam Ashrausham, Adbhutam Roma Harshanam. Sanjaya said, "Thus I have heard the conversation of two great souls, Krishna and Arjuna, and so wonderful is that message that my hair is standing on the end." Sorry, not mine. Text 75. Vyasa Prasada Shrutvanan Shrutavan Etad Guhyam Aham Param Yogam Yogeshwarat Krishnat Sakshat Katayata Swayam. By mercy of Vyas, I have heard this most confidential talks directly from the master of all mysticism, Krishna, who was speaking personally to Arjuna. Text 76. Rajan samsmritya samsmritya samvadam imam adbhutam keshavarjanayo punyam shishyami cha muhurmuhu. O king, as I repeatedly recall this wondrous and holy dialogue between Krishna and Arjuna, I take pleasure being thrilled at every moment. Text 77. Tatcha samsmritya samsmritya rupam hi adbhutam hare vishmayo me mahan rajan shishyami cha puna puna. O king, as I remember the wonderful form of Lord Krishna, I am struck with wonder more and more, and I rejoice again and again. Text 78. Yatra Yogeshwaro Krishna, Yatra Partho Dhanurdharaha, Tatra Srir Vijayor Bhuti, Dhruva Nitir Matir Nama. Wherever there is Krishna, the master of all mystics, and wherever there is Arjuna, the supreme archer, there will also certainly be opulence, victory, extraordinary power, and morality. That is my opinion. This purport is beautiful. It kind of gives the whole, in a nutshell, Srila Prabhupada gives the whole Bhagavad Gita. It's a very beautiful purport. It's worth reading. Who knows, questions might come. Just kidding. So the last few verses from 74 through 78 are realizations by Sanjaya about the effect it had on knowing that particular dialogue between Krishna and Arjuna, and how he was like thrilled, his hair was standing on end, and how it is such a wonderful nectarian topic. There is one purport. In the purport, I had a question, but I don't have an answer. Is that here on page 759 in the second 759 and the second paragraph in the purport. Narada is a direct disciple of Krishna and the spiritual master of Vyas. So Narada is, from we understand from the disciplic succession, is a disciple of Brahma. So when Srila Prabhupada writes he's a direct disciple of Krishna, I couldn't understand or I couldn't reconcile why Srila Prabhupada wrote that. Because in the disciplic succession, if you see on the page, it's there here. What's that?
31.
Thank you, Master. So on page 31, it is Krishna, Brahma, Narada, and Vyas. What's that? Yeah, go ahead.
Could it be that Narada often meets Lord Vishnu also? So he was hearing from him also directly?
Yeah, I was exactly thinking the same thing. More of a siksha kind of relationship also. So he can be... So that could be the explanation. That is way to reconcile. Because Krishna explained many esoteric truths directly to Narada also, not through Brahma. So, nice. So any final... comments or questions?
One question, sorry. Not directly related to what Bhagavad Gita, but this is the subsequent to that. Like Dhritarashtra was hearing all the Bhagavad Gita, and at the end, did he still have hope that his sons were going to win the battle? Because he heard the whole Bhagavad Gita.
Well, it's hard to say, but after Sanjaya clearly said, Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna Tatra Parthodana, Yatra Shrir Vijor Bhuti Daudhwani, that it's like, you know, victory is going to be on his side. And I don't think Dhritarashtra had anything. Maybe he fired him later, I don't know, for hearing bad news, but that's a different story. It's a joke aside. But it's clear. He says, you know, your sons don't even stand a chance. Because there is Krishna, the supreme master of all mystic powers. Here is Arjuna, the supreme archer. Where they are present, you know, there is morality, there is victory, there is opulence. What chance do you stand? So that's all we can say. Thank you very much. It's been a wonderful completion of Bhagavad Gita. It's I have learned a lot about Bhagavad Gita. And so we... Any questions? The only questions I can't answer is what are the questions that are going to come into exam. So... Yes.
Because we came across this in the readings from the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where Maharaj Yudhishthir, when he is in some difficulty or doesn't know the answer to something, turns to Narada Muni. Mm. And there, Narada Muni is described as the great sage who knows everything.
Right.
So they ask Narada Muni.
Right.
And he has that exalted position, even though he's moving about in the three worlds. He's residing in Vaikuntha. But he is considered to be a master guru that people turn to him.
Nice.
So he has that position.
Nice. Thank you. So we were talking a little bit about revision session. Do you still think we need revision sessions? Or the one way of doing it definitely is that we won't assemble physically. I don't think we have the time, or the devotees have the suitable time that they can prepare slides. Last time, like Rakshit Prabhu, he prepared a whole slide on one chapter. There was a presentation going on. I honestly don't think we have that much time to do that this time. One way of doing the revision thing is that we can have all the questions. I mean, those who have questions, they can just send it to the group or to me, and then we can collect all those questions, and then we can have just a conference call and then talk.
Can we write a thing according to the chapter so we can make questions? Like one person can choose one of the chapters?
Yeah, it's hard to say. For example, Shraddha Mataji read chapter 12 and 14. She had questions in both. She wrote it down. Mm-hmm. So similarly, somebody may have questions in more chapters. It's just like we can have, per chapter basis, we can have questions.
Yeah.
And then we can just clarify them. That could be one thing. Based on the questions we get, probably we'll send an email saying that we have this time and this conference number and things like that can work.
Can we all send the questions to you? And yeah. I'm pretty sure there'll be duplicate questions. And then in one session, you kind of just give us a lecture and walk us through all the answers.
Yeah, that can
be that way.
That can be done too. Next week or the week after that, probably we'll have like, you know, one and a half hour audio conference call wherein we can discuss. Is that okay? Or I don't know. I'm open to ideas at this point of time. Because some devotees might have done few chapters, some have not done. So it's just, I think, it's, let's keep it a free-for-all questions. Just, you know, all the nine chapters, anywhere where you are, you can just have questions. You can shoot them to me, and then I can, as Mataji said, I can collate those questions. And if they are duplicates, then get in one order, and then we can discuss. That's one. That's not a bad idea. If there are not many questions, then we can just probably do it on an individual basis or something. Or send it to the group. Group, that's all.
So this approach would be different from taking up a chapter at a time.
Right.
And seeing if there were questions there or something unclear there.
Right. Because
That's what was talked about last time.
Correct. Because we had... we have just 4 weeks, exactly 4 weeks from today, for the final exam. And, you know, I don't think devotees have time to actually prepare slides, go through, like, you know, it's a time-consuming thing. They have to assemble here for 3-4 hours, they discuss. So I think it's...
Not the format I was referring to, but last time there was some discussion that in a conference call, we may take up a chapter at a time, where initially just a summary is given.
Right.
And then people would bring up if they have any doubts or questions and then move on to the next one. This is one format that was talked about. Yeah.
But the problem is that, you know, some devotees may be ahead, some devotees may be catching up. So it's better just have questions and rather than, you know, having like a summary. We can do that summary also. Probably during the question answer session we can just do it a little bit. But whether that summary would actually help the exam is debatable.
Prabhuji, I was thinking that like rather than having 1.5 hour on the same day, even if it's for 30 minutes, like 10 minutes in the morning, like when we do chat, it would take us 5-6 minutes for each chapter. So if you're doing 30 minutes for 3 different weeks, we have the 4th week will be the exam. So we do 3 chapters. I know that there are people ahead, but the 30 minutes wouldn't be a long time to just brush through the 3 chapters, like in summary, and the questions. Would that be a lot to ask?
So it'll be 1.5 hours? Is that what you're saying?
No, 30 minutes. Like 1.5 hour divided in 3 weeks. Or even if it's 45 minutes.
So half an hour for the summary, then where is the time?
No, half an hour for summary. Summary means just a very short, Prabhu.
Oh.
Like what is Krishna trying to tell in this chapter?
Oh, I see.
And what are we getting out of it? No, not going into each shloka and
or
discussing. No,
even the group just of verses itself is going to take a lot of time.
Yeah. No, it's just so we will have like 2 to 3 minutes for summary.
Right.
And then for 25 minutes, we can discuss the questions.
Okay.
For the 3 chapters. So I'm just thinking that if that is okay.
Okay.
Then one person can actually choose to do the summary, rather than everybody doing it. So, you know, for three chapters, if that's okay.
Yeah, we can do that. It's not a problem. If we can have volunteers, we can. But then again, we have to collate volunteers, and then, you know, who is going to do what chapter.
No, Prabhuji, I think we are...
Okay, go ahead. I mean, like, I'm okay. We can do that.
You would want to take, Prabhuji, the first 3 chapters? I mean, that is 10, 11, 12?
A couple of chapters, studies them, reviews them, and then we'll give a flowing summary, one and a half page, like often in front of the certain chapters you have the summary of the whole thing. Something like that. We'll essentially read it out, say it out, and then we would take questions on the chapter. Is that the idea?
Yeah, I was also
Yes.
You can give her one more mic.
Yes, thank you.
Taking questions, Prabhu, you could actually come up with questions for the chapter, the possible questions of this chapters. Like others also can come up, and they can send it to you ahead of time, no?
Masiji,
if you have any doubts like that.
Right?
Okay.
Because otherwise, bringing up questions is going to be a very tiring.
It's very exploratory, and also the type of questions that one comes up with may not necessarily be those that may appear in the exam.
Right.
Sure, so only questions that they have doubts.
Okay. So it is better to clarify doubts and convey understanding that people understand, you know. They can bring up at that point, look, I didn't understand that verse. Can you please go into it?
Yes, Prabhu.
And the moderator can respond to that, or others who are on the call can give their view. Yes, so, that sounds... It's important to time it, really. Because,
so we have only 30 minutes.
Yes.
We will not spend more than that. So in the meantime, in the first week, for people like me, I can just go ahead, brush up the first three chapters very well, and then ask questions done. The next week, three chapters, and then next week. So in 3 weeks, we would be done with all the nine chapters.
Sounds good, man.
And you would like to do one of the first three, Prabhuji?
Well...
Or you want to do the middle or the last three?
I can do like 13, 14, 15.
Okay, 10, 11, 12 is something. I can do 10, 11, 12, Prabhu.
Okay. And then somebody else.
Shramana Sakam?
For me, sorry, Mataji.
Did you...
Actually, I don't know whether I will even be able to attend or not. This is a teleconference, right, that you're talking about? Okay. Yeah, I can do it, but first I need to know about all those timings and everything. And then only I will know.
Or we'll just send the email out to the group so somebody else can volunteer also.
Oh, okay.
Because it's a teleconference. We can, you know, that's fine. Now you do, you know, 10, 11, 12. Rakshit Prabhu is going to do 13, 14, 15. And then we can say there are remaining three. They can divide among three devotees or one devotee is taking three. Anything is fine. We can just send an email. Or can you just send an email to the group also with the phone number, because I don't have that phone number which you use for the chat. And then we can, based on the response, we can work
this
it out.
This would be on the chat program?
No.
It's just the number is chats. But then we... And then the time, let's quickly decide on the time. What time would be better? Sundays?
Well, if it is Sundays, a better time would be morning or so.
What, at like 7:30, 8 o'clock? 8 o'clock?
Yes.
7 to 8? Yeah. Or it will be too much?
Oh,
yeah. 9 won't work for me.
How about 8 to 9?
That's possible.
Yeah, 8 to 9.
But 9 strictly I have to cut off because I have another call at 9 o'clock every Sunday. Yeah, that's fine, whatever. 7:30 to 8:30 is good.
Okay.
I mean, it's voluntary. At this point, it's like we just send out the information. Anybody who wants to join can join. And if they can't, they can't. It's completely optional. Yeah, let's just keep it that way. Any other observations or comments you had? Any feedback about the semester? Any room for improvement, please, always. There is no deadline for doing that. You can.
No, I just want to say that the whole program, it went very good. So
thank you.
I'm very much happy with it.
Thank you, Prabhuji.
And we have done an excellent job, Prabhuji. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Be very indebted, Prabhu.
No.
Really?
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I wouldn't have read Prabhupada's books if it was not for Bhakti Shastri. And I'm hoping that you will keep in mind about the Bhakti Vaibhava.
I definitely am.
And we are
doing our best to get our center approved, but there are some issues and difficulties in the way. By Krishna's mercy and by your prayers, hopefully we get that.
Because I cannot think that when Bhakti Shastri will be over, what will I do? I will not read. It's very hard to think. Thank you, Prabhu.
Thank you. So next semester, I'll send out the schedule. We'll just take a breather, probably at least, you know, 3-4 weeks. We'll take a breather after this, and then we can start our semester. I don't know the format yet. Because right now, for last three semesters, we have been so used to reading shlokas word by word, purport. This is just a summary study. There are no like shlokas. There are no, order. There's an order, but it's just like summary study. If you see Nectar of Devotion, it's page after page, just reading like a novel. It's a very, very condensed novel. But so one of the things is that we can come every 2 weeks, and then you can actually read here with all of us, or you can read at home, and then we can discuss here. I think that's a better choice, I feel, instead of reading here for the first time. We can read at home, and then we can discuss. Each chapter is like 2 pages or 3 pages. So it's not like, a lot of reading. But there is a lot of information in that we kind of get it out and when we discuss here. There is no more updates as far as the books goes. We'll keep the devotees informed as and when we get the information. Bhakti Vaibhava, I definitely keep it. Please keep reminding me. Don't think that you are bugging me by keeping me reminding me. At least that way it will help me do push to kind of do work towards it. And by grace of Guru and Krishna, I probably will have. Okay. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai.